This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Our taping is made possible with the support of Raider, a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. Our podcast is also made possible with the support of our premier sponsor, IberiaBank. They support our community in so many ways, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. IberiaBank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible. Lafayette General has been a leader in telemedicine. With the Health Anywhere app, your family can access quality urgent care at any time without an appointment, all from the comfort of home. It's the waiting room redefined. Download the app today at lghealthanywhere.com. Hannah Gumbo is our guest today. An artist illustrator, creating work from her studio in Eunice, Hannah received her Bachelor of Fine Arts degree from UL Lafayette with a concentration in painting and printmaking. Her work has evolved to include a combination of acrylic paint and Photoshop that come together to produce a voice that's all her own. She embraces color, positivity, and joy in her freelance work, outdoor murals, and online shop. And I'm thrilled to learn more about Hannah Gumbo along with Discover Lafayette's listeners, as I think we need all the fun and joie de vivre we can muster up these days. So Hannah Gumbo, welcome to my home and welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we've had a great visit. Before we started taping, you met my daughter Taylor. My older daughter is also an artist. She dreams about doing what you're doing. She has sold art and she's got a day job. Your day job is art, mm-hmm. and you create memories and fun things. Looking you up online, I love what you do. So it didn't just happen overnight, did it? You had to put some work into this. Would you tell us about how you grew up and what led you to your current work in art?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working right now on this amazing project that kind of has been bringing together all these things that I care about. It's actually, I call it a legacy barn mural. So it's telling the life story of this man who built the barn that's passed away. And his five children have come together to commission this piece. Oh. And I'm painting part of the barn and leaving part of the barn patinaed and beautiful and all of its aged beauty and glory. But yeah, I've been doing that. And I had one of my friends come by with her young girls that are homeschooled. And it kind of took me back because this is exactly the kind of stuff that I grew up doing. My mom homeschooled us, me and my siblings, and we would kind of just get up and go, see different things, go on trips, have art projects, experiments, you name it. So I think, you know, really seeing now my friends that are taking that route with their kids, it's kind of bringing back some of the memories of maybe what's led me to this point and why I love doing what I do.
You grew up in Lafayette?
I did. Yeah. Uh-huh. Broussard area, which was a totally different place
back then.
Yeah. It had such a small town feel. I remember it being the biggest deal when we got the Albertsons.
Oh yeah. Albertsons Parkway. Yeah.
And now when I visit, my parents still live there. When I visit them, it's like night and day. There's so much development.
Hannah, not many kids are homeschooled. And I know with COVID, a lot more people are looking at it. But when you were growing up, from what I understand, the statistics are less than 3% of families in the U.S. actually have homeschooling options that they consider. But everybody I know that's done it says it gave them this freedom to learn what they liked, to think on their own, to be a self-starter. Did you find that? Did your mom give you some freedom to kind of pursue some of the topics you wanted to learn more about?
Absolutely. I think at the time, I ended up going to public school for high school.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And that's when I received my first official art classes and, you know, got to make friends and be around people. And for me, that was the right move. Mm-hmm. So I kind of left homeschooling, I guess, in more of a negative sense. And I've kind of, that's what I think of more so homeschooling. Oh, I missed people. Oh, it was so great to have access to like an art classroom and people interested in the same things as me. But I think I haven't really considered the impact of exactly what you just talked about. I think there's so much of solitude in what I do right now. Mm-hmm. There's so much that requires having a self-starter attitude, mm-hmm. and choosing positivity,
yeah.
and choosing to keep going, that I had to develop working from home and finding my own creativity and kind of pursuing mm-hmm. that. So I definitely think that it's helped me so much, like more so than I probably even have picked up on. Mm-hmm. And only now am I realizing the value of being able to sit with my thoughts and,
let them simmer. Let them just be.
Right, right, right.
And I do want to share with you, when young girls become 5th, 6th, 7th grade, when they're in school, before you started, you know, high school, a lot of them suppress their thoughts because they're trying to fit in with the boys. And I think you probably had an opportunity that as you age, you'll see that you were able to be Hannah,
mm-hmm.
and not be as worried about being judged. So I think you got the best of both.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I know a lot of artists and creative people struggle with what is my voice?
Mm-hmm.
What is my style? How do I find that? And there's definitely been a lot of struggles and a lot of decision fatigue and figuring out mm-hmm. what I want to do with this passion, where I want to lead it. But having my own voice has never been a problem for me. And I think that has to do with just the time and the investment that I was given to figure that out early on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you went to UL Lafayette, and we were speaking again before we started taping this. I know you had some excellent teachers at UL. So you studied fine arts, painting, and printmaking. Were you ready for a career in art when you were in college, or did you decide then that I think I can make a living out of this?
Yeah, so I'll always bring up Kathy Reed, who was actually my teacher in high school, and she, I think, is the reason so many artists in Acadiana are thriving and love art and have this deep passion. I started her class when I was a sophomore in high school, and she would take us on field trips to UL and would have the professors come in. So when I started at UL, I felt familiar with the program, mm-hmm. and she really just created this this deep confidence that art and expression is worth pursuing. And I never even had a second thought about it. In fact, it's funny because as I was ending my time at UL, I remember fellow students of mine kind of having these panic attacks. Oh, my mm-hmm. parents think, how am I going to make money? Oh my goodness, maybe I should switch majors. And for the first time, I thought, oh, wait, was this the point? Are we supposed to be making a career out of this?
Oh, because I have to pay my car note. Yeah.
Yeah. I worked the whole time during college, but I think because I wasn't necessarily exposed to official art classes until later,
mm-hmm.
it felt like a gift. It felt mm-hmm. like a gift to be able to study it longer, to develop these skills, even if it was just for that time period and I never did it again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I thought it was going to be. I didn't set out to necessarily make a career out of it. I just didn't want to shortchange myself from figuring out what I was capable of.
Your parents didn't push you to get like a real job?
They didn't. Uh-huh. They didn't. So many other people have had that struggle, but
and I'm doing real job, like in quotes.
But, right. Yeah, they were really awesome and supportive. I mean, I would bring home art projects and they'd be like, mm-hmm. what is this? Explain this.
Is that a cow or a, yeah.
Right. I think the most, this is not just my parents. This is probably everybody in my life and in any art student's life. They say, why don't you just make something pretty? There's like, they just don't understand why you're spending so much effort making weird things.
They want you just to paint, like go look at the flower.
Yeah.
And recreate what you see.
Just make more magnolias. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think they thought it was cool. And both of my parents are super creative. So they were very supportive of it. They never questioned. And I think that goes back to us, the way we were raised. And just, mm-hmm. I think my parents have confidence in all of us that we are going to figure it out and they'll be there to help us along the way. So,
right.
Yeah, that was now, awesome.
When did you become Hannah Gumbo?
Oh my gosh.
I haven't said your full name, but
right.
I'll leave that up to you. But you, at some point you became Hannah Gumbo.
It feels like urban legend now. Uh-huh. Like, what is the true beginning? I think I started signing work and going by that because I was trying to figure out an Instagram handle and other stuff was taken. But yes. This is a nickname my husband gave me years back.
Really?
And yeah. And so,
Hannah Gumbo?
Hannah Gumbo. He kind of picks on me because, you know, I kept my maiden name. I didn't take his name. And I'm like, yeah, but babe, you gave me my artist name. So
mm-hmm. We are truly married.
Yeah. We're married. We'll share gumbo. That'll be our thing.
So you started that on Instagram and you just started signing your work, Hannah Gumbo?
Yes. I believe it's like, I try to trace back and think, but I think that's when it kind of phased over. So
I'm going to let you explain to people in your words, how do you describe your work? Like, how do you, it's fun. I just tell people if they can go to your website, just Google Hannah Gumbo. You've got a great website, but how do you describe your work and where the creativity comes from?
Yeah, I think when people think of artists, they think of, all of the possibilities and how exciting that is. And that's definitely true. But I think when you're creating work, it's more about limiting your possibilities. So if I have a blank canvas, I'm going to decide to paint it with oils versus acrylic. And then I'm going to decide on a color palette. And everything I do is sharpening my vision to create the end result. And so I think that's a little bit of how any artist's art career is as well. I started off just wanting to paint, just wanting to draw. If you ask me, what do you like to draw? I don't know, anything, cats, you know? And over time, just this year, I was kind of meditating on why do I do what I do? What is it really? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's connection is huge for me, but I have this, I have this desire that I really want art to be more accessible and free and fun and easy. I think when I was in school, kind of like I was describing, there's so many like amazing museums and historical pieces of art and concepts and beautiful things. But I felt like it took work to get to the point to accept those and enjoy those. Mm-hmm. And so, I think there's something to be said. There's a place for all of it in the world, but I'm really interested in things that people are not intimidated by. I love public art for that reason. Mm-hmm. I love that people can say, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And I could say, you don't have to understand it. What do you feel? Do you enjoy this? Do you know, art is not something that has to be necessarily intellectually pieced apart in order to get its full value. So, I think ultimately it's about connection for me and then also just being a visual storyteller. Mm-hmm. Some people don't enjoy taking on custom work. They kind of, you know, they have a vision and they don't want other people to get in the way, really. But I find the opposite. I love working with someone and hearing their ideas and like using my skill set to partner with them mm-hmm. and actually bring it to life. It feels exciting and it feels like it's something bigger than me. And so, kind of going back to the first project that I mentioned, this barn, this barn mural, I just think that for me, that's where the true love is. It's going to be enjoyed. It holds a greater meaning than even I'm putting into it. And it ultimately is just telling a bigger story, which I think is interesting.
Right. So people hire you to do these private jobs. That's not for public consumption, right? That's on a private piece of land.
It is on the private land, but we're working with St. Landry Parish Tourism, and it will be on their site, and it will be open to the public.
That's cool. Is that Herman Fuseli? Who's with St. Landry Tourism?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another artist. I mean, I know he's more musical, but
yes,
that's so cool.
Yeah, I love our tourism. They're awesome.
Yeah. And you're in St. Landry Parish.
I am.
That's right, from Eunice. So when I look at your art, it seems like it's really, it reminds me of posters for festivals. It captures the fun spirit where it might not be the exact replica of something, but it captures the meaning and the spirit behind what you're looking at. Is that something you had to fine-tune, or did you always sketch like that? Have you kind of fine-tuned your work product to be consistent? Because it seems like it's pretty consistent, yeah, at least what I've seen. Yeah. I haven't seen everything, of course, but it's fun to look at.
Yeah, I'm like all up in the Kool-Aid, so I need other people to tell me if it's consistent or not. But I think it's that refinement again, and mm-hmm. refinement under pressure. Throughout school, you know, you have assignments due, and that's pressure, and you want to impress your peers and these amazing teachers that you have, and that has its own pressure. But I remember leaving and realizing there's no one watching, and there's essentially no one that cares what I draw or what I make. So where do I go from here? And that is an enormous pressure.
Yeah.
Completely, completely on the other, you know, realm. It's mm-hmm. so interesting, because even if I work with students now, you know, why are you making me, you know, have these rules or these colors? I just want to make what I want to make. And that's what we think we want. But actually so much beauty comes from having limitations and having the pressure of limitations, and you kind of can see what you're made of. And so I think being able to represent larger concepts in a simple way simply came out of me trying to solve individual problems. Uh-huh. You know, I have done festival poster work and things like that, and there's a deadline, and yeah, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and you're trying to make a lot of people happy. And at the end of the day, there's no right way to do it. I think that is something I enjoy too. People maybe have a certain thing in their mind if you say, you know, draw the Cajun Trinity or draw Cajun culture. Uh-huh. And they are picturing something really specific, you know, people sitting at a wooden table holding an instrument. And that's just not how my brain works. My brain goes to, you know, zigzag lines and energy and chaos and fun and family. And how do you get that into the image too? Mm-hmm. And I'm not always successful. I mean, I think I remember just, stressing out over some of these projects and thinking, this is my best work ever. And now I go back and look and I'm like, whew, thank goodness my skills have improved.
Really? You've seen an evolution?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Uh-huh. Because I was trained in painting and drawing. I had taken one digital art class and it was the worst grade I ever got in college. So the fact that I'm integrating that in my work whatsoever is like a mm-hmm. complete miracle.
Is that something you do in most of your work?
Yeah. I use Photoshop and my
murals too to design. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, can you explain that? How does that work?
Yeah, so
do you start first with the digital or the drawing?
So it kind of depends on the project. I do switch up. I don't have a super set routine. Mm-hmm. But something that I do is always try to save time, you know, efficiency. So sometimes that requires computer work, and sometimes that's sketching on a napkin. So whatever's going to get the job done the quickest. But in most of my work, I'm hopping back and forth between, you know, physically drawing on a sheet of paper and then drawing. I have what essentially is a giant iPad. It's called a Wacom tablet. And so I have a pen mm-hmm. and I'm drawing on the actual screen, but it's pretty large. It's bigger than an iPad. So it transfers pretty easily in my head, either drawing on paper or drawing on this screen, but that allows me to scale things. It allows me to try out different colors.
That's fine. It's my computer in the background. Yeah.
At least it's a pleasant sound.
I know.
So it just depends, but for this particular mural, I wrote down a lot of the snippets of Mr. Calvin's life. Mm-hmm. This is the person who built the barn. And we got together, we had coffee, we kind of talked about what that can look like. I refined the ideas, and then I did a series of sketches on my computer, and then was able to use a photo of the barn and basically do mock-ups to where we could mm-hmm. see, you know, scaled versions of what this could look like, which I think is just awesome, because, you know, you're bringing this lofty vision into somebody's mind and having really precise images to go along with that and show this is really what I'm thinking, can be really beneficial. And it also helps me when I do freehand, and I also do any and all methods to get my image onto the wall. With this one, it's mostly freehand. But I print out my scaled versions of the mock-up, and then I have a physical paper that I'm looking at as I'm looking at the wall and kind of trying to match that imagery. So it's awesome. Technology can be a really great thing. I fought it for so long and I would take hours to do something that could be done in like 10 minutes, you know, on a piece of paper, but I've really embraced it over the last few years. Mm-hmm. And I think it's brought another element to my work. And, of course now when I draw something, I'm like going to hit the command buttons that would erase it on my screen. So there's some things that are great with digital. It's so forgiving. Whereas in real life, if you make a mistake, you can't erase it as easily.
Right. I always wondered about that. I told you I'd interviewed Robert Dafford, and I've seen he works in a studio on getting the mural kind of going, and then they take something and bring it to the site. But I always wondered about the scale. Like if you mess up,
you
really mess up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the good thing is you're going to, something's going to happen, right? The humidity, paint may fall, like something is going to go wrong. And so having a tight plan, but like a loose outlook on it has been really the best way to go. Because at the end of the day, sometimes what you had in your head is not as good as what ends up working out. Yeah. And sometimes I just, they're quote unquote mistakes, but I roll with it. And sometimes they make the piece better. So sometimes you have to go back and start over, but
yeah, we all do. Every profession. Yeah. Sometimes you have to just start over, which is okay. That's how we learn. So you are making your way as a working artist. This is your day job. Mm-hmm. And, I've got to think, I don't know if COVID's been good or bad, but people still want to be, they want to have beautiful things surrounding them. They want to feel good when they walk in their homes or go see art. So you work on your own anyway. Has the COVID pandemic affected your ability to get projects, or are you just trucking along? Like, how has this affected you as an artist? Because I know it's affected many people.
Well, like I was telling you earlier, both me and my husband are remote working now. So we both work from home. And we've done that for a good bit. So we're used to working together, and we have a pretty small home. So for the first few months of COVID, it was business as usual. And other people were really having the growing pains of having to incorporate work life into home and establish boundaries and all these things. And I felt like we had that down pat. As we're reaching, you know, October, it has it's definitely taken its toll, because I'm realizing that so much of what we incorporated into our weekends and just the events that I would do, festivals, and it really brought a lot of life and just like social people time into our life. And with that being eliminated, it's harder to have that balance and say, I'm going to stop working now. It's hard to bring fresh vision to projects or keep that, you know, quote unquote inspiration going. So I'm definitely, you know, realizing all the value of how we had our weekends and how that's kind of just been eliminated. But through this whole thing, I have felt like really, really grateful to be out in Eunice. There's so much beautiful land. And so, you know, we take walks multiple times a day we look at this beautiful, these beautiful crawfish ponds. And as the seasons change, notice all the different things. We just got a dog recently, which I was telling you. So we've been taking him on walks with us. And I think the simplicity of that is really calming when you are making creative decisions all day. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have the quiet. But yeah, I'm also missing people, missing all those little moments, all, you know, bringing your work and having people respond to it and seeing what other people are up to and what they're making. So,
Right. Do you have any projects that you're most proud of or you want to share? Like what are some things you've worked on that really kind of define some high points for you?
I think like anything in life, you know, you look back on the things you were terrified that you didn't feel like you had the skills to do. And those are your proudest moments, even if it's not the best work you're capable of, or just when you take a chance on yourself, when you believe in yourself and say, I'm gonna do this anyway. So the first mural that I did felt like a giant leap. It was a huge space. I had to write a grant in order to get funding for it. Every step of that felt like this is so much bigger than me, and I don't know if I'm capable of it. The first job that I got that was 100% digital that needed all of these files sent. And it, I mean, that in and of itself, I felt, oh, this is so overwhelming. What if I get it wrong? People are depending on me. And of course, with public art and this mural, you have a captive audience. Mm-hmm. And so I want people to be able to come up and talk to me. I want them to be invested in the progress and be able to ask me questions, but it's also nerve wracking. So I think each of those times that I stepped into uncharted territory has felt just terrifying. And it, I mean, it never stops. I'm terrified of public speaking, even doing interviews and stuff. I'm like, I have nothing interesting to say. But anytime I step into that, I always am proud of myself. And I feel like all those stepping stones have led me to where I am now, you know. And so, yeah, that's what I'm proud of.
One thing I was looking at online was the Sunday Harry's, 100 original portraits of iconic hairstyles in 100 days. And I know one of them that you did was Red Lorraine, who of course has outstanding red hair, and Farrah Fawcett and other well-known people. What got you to do that and talk about it? Like, what was that?
I should have just mentioned that project when you said, how's COVID going? Because I feel like that speaks to how kooky things got. Definitely when, you know, spring and fall, I typically do more events and more markets. And like I was saying, it's really energizing for me to be around people and meet other makers, but it's also where I make sales for my online shop. So I knew that all the events were going to be canceled. And so I really felt like it was a good time for a passion project, just a project that I normally wouldn't have time for, something to kind of experiment with, have fun with. And so I'd heard people do these 100-day projects, and it doesn't have to be art specific. It can be just maybe a skill set, or maybe you want to get stronger and you want to do 10 push-ups a day. But you really try to bring in the consistency of whatever this thing is, I'm going to do it for 100 days. And so I thought it would be fun because I do work, you know, some weeks specifically just digital. And so I really wanted to get back into my sketchbook and have the freedom to work with watercolor or, you know, paint pens or gel pens. And so I decided that I would spend 15 minutes, which normally I would spend longer because I'd get super into it, but try to create a portrait every day for 100 days. And how I would choose that would be an iconic hairstyle. So it could be from like a character and like a movie, or it could be from a real person. And so, yeah, it was fun to brainstorm, like, what would be fun to draw
today?
Yeah, today. And like, I mean, I made like a list of who I wanted to include. And then I would ask people, you know, who should be on there. And that's kind of how the local people got added to the mix. Red Laurel and Sharon Moss.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it was fun, and it allowed me to kind of each day try a fresh take on portraiture. And
did you do Dolly Parton?
I did. Yeah.
I mean, that's what Taylor asked me. I was like, I guess she did. Like, yes. I didn't go through all of them, but
yes, and I did actually. Sometimes, you know, it was less about the hairstyle and more like, I really want to draw this because I did Amy Sedaris, which is not known for her hair, but she had this crazy aluminum foil wig. Yeah. And so I, of course I had to do that.
She's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
so you would spend 15 minutes.
Yeah. So, that was the goal, to do it daily. Sometimes I would, you know, group it all together and do four at a time. But I did 100. I mean, so many projects that I start, it's like, 50, it's good enough.
Are you selling those?
I did. Yeah. I still have them on Etsy. And I would each week on Sunday, I would release the 7 that I did for that day.
And people could buy like posters or what size are they?
They were roughly around like a 5x7 and they were originals. So I didn't make copies of any of them.
I see.
So yeah, you would just be purchasing the original from me. And yeah, I started that early on. So every Sunday, I would release the 7 on Etsy and I would post about it. And sometimes something I would learn about the person or something interesting. But yeah, that was definitely a fun little project to do in the midst of so many unknowns.
Yeah. Now, what kind of things inspire you? I know you like Amy Sedaris and The Sound of Music I read about. So what is it about these type of things? Like, how do you draw on this inspiration? Like, what is it about The Sound of Music? That is it the singing? Is it the landscape or...
Yeah, I think I love musicals. I always end up, if I'm listening to Pandora, if it's like on a musical list, I keep it way longer than anything else. And Trolls, the kids movie, I love that soundtrack.
Oh, yeah?
I listen to Trolls soundtrack like all the time. It's kind of embarrassing. But yeah, Sound of Music is kind of interesting that you bring that up. I just have these memories of going to my grandma's house when she'd watch us. And she had this box set of My Fair Lady, The King and I, and the Sound
King
of Music.
I, wait, love that. We used to listen to that in the car. I got so tired of Barney because my daughter is a couple years younger than you, but I thought I cannot listen to anymore.
Yeah,
she called
me BB.
So we learned all the Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yes.
But The King and I is pretty special.
They're so just huge productions.
And
they're
beautiful.
They're beautiful. And the artistry they brought to each of the scenes, even the ones that you would think they don't matter as much, that's in the background. But yeah, I have awesome memories of that. And it's kind of cool because people will reach out about those specific things. So this week I actually delivered a painting that is some of the lyrics to a Sound of Music song, My Favorite Things. And this woman was super awesome. We talked about doing this custom painting for her, and she lives in Lake Charles. And then the storm hit.
Where is she
and
now?
And so she's still there.
Okay.
She had a little bit of damage, but things have been repaired. Mm-hmm. So we met up this week, and she was wearing her Sound of Music shirt to pick up this painting. And she was so excited about it.
Were they her favorite things or the favorite things from the movie?
They were from the movie, but she's putting it in her favorite room next to, it's kind of like, you know, her sacred spot with all of her favorite things. So yeah, it was just so awesome that she wore the actual shirt from one of the productions she went see.
You know, not many of us get to interact with people like you do. Like, you're bringing them joy and you're really listening to them, right? To give them what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me that sometimes people think you know what they want, but we have to tell you what we want, right?
Right.
Like, some people go, well, you'll know.
Yeah.
How would you know if we didn't tell you? So it's got to be tough.
Being like a, you know, freelance artist, entrepreneur, small business person. I mean, obviously you realize you have to wear a lot of hats to make that work, but there are some really strange skill sets that I would have never thought I needed to bring to the table. And communication is huge. I feel like people are like, oh yeah, I just draw something, and I've learned to really clarify and really try to understand what's the goal that we're both trying to reach here. Because for me, I mean yes, it's how I make my living, but at the end of the day, I want the work of my hands to have value and meaning, and I want everybody to walk away happy. I want everybody to win. And so yeah, it's really been cool. It's forced me to not, you know, stick my head in the sketchbook and keep drawing quietly. It's forced me to learn how to interact with people better and ask better questions. And I think like a silver lining of that has been, I do feel like I really get to know people better. And it's this beautiful exchange of them trusting me to bring their vision to life. So
do you show people sometimes a sketch before you get in too deep?
Yes.
And say, is this what we both were thinking? You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, part of me hates that because I'm like, let's just see where it goes, right? Everybody, let's just chill out and see what happens. But yeah, I've had to start instituting policies and procedures, and I think sometimes they bring out a better product. Yeah. And it's fun to see people. The worst, though, which I've learned, this is part of it too, you show people like 3 sketches, and if you really hate any of the sketches you're giving them, just pull it out, because they'll always choose the one you hate.
Like, oh gosh.
And I'm like, oh, why did you choose that one? But yeah, it's cool. I mean, even when you're working on something that you're not excited about, it's like, how can you get excited about it? Mm-hmm. And there's always more than what's in the surface. Yeah. And sometimes jobs that I've been like, oh, whatever, this is just going to be like a get it done situation, have actually been the most interesting and have like forced me to try out maybe like techniques or things I wouldn't have otherwise. So yeah.
Expand your boundaries. Like you mm-hmm. said about doing digital work yeah. and other things. Once you survive something you don't think you can do,
yeah.
you realize, well, gosh,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And it's like another step up the ladder of experience.
So. Yeah. And the ladder is so high. So I think
it is.
Until you sit and actually talk about it like we are, you realize that you've made progress. It doesn't feel like mm-hmm. you feel like you're still just going up a ladder.
So you think,
like I was going up a ladder last yeah. year, and I'm still going up. And then you realize, oh, I'm higher up than I was, though. It just didn't seem like it.
Well, as young as you are, let's picture Hannah, let's say when you're 60.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're still going to be working as an artist. Do you have dreams for what you want to do, or are you just taking it as it comes?
I do. I mean, I think I do better with short-term goals. It kind of scares me to think about the future.
Doubling your age. Well, let's not double it. Let's think about 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Well, for a long time, me and my husband wanted to be more mobile and to be able to work while traveling. So mm-hmm. up till now, it's been work, 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 travel, come back and work. And I feel like I really enjoy travel, but it feels kind of like... I don't know, you're getting inspired. It's kind of like a one-way direction. And so I think it would be awesome to be able to work on the road and actually respond when I'm in a place and not just be creating artwork in Louisiana, mm-hmm. Having come back from a trip, but actually be in another environment and being inspired daily and responding to that. So we have been paying to get a camper trailer.
Cool.
Yeah, and we'll be able to pick that up in the spring. And so that's the goal, is to have some months of the year in Louisiana and some mm-hmm. out doing our own thing elsewhere. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So that's a short-term dream we've been working really hard to get to.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I love connection. I love travel. And so I've been trying to see any kind of artist residencies that'd be a good fit for me. But, you know, just for me personally, I haven't been able to get into any. And I've find it pretty discouraging and kind of a just like a stressful component to being an artist, is, you know, you're always putting yourself out even just for opportunities. And so a long-term dream would be, I would love to house a facility that could be that for other people, that could be an artist residency in Eunice in Louisiana, that artists from all over the world could come and stay and be inspired by our landscape and our culture.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so maybe 60-year-old Hannah will be hanging out with you know, international place. Artists in Eunice.
I love that. Now, you said that you really do love traveling, and you've seen, what, 49
yes.
of our 50 yeah. states. When did you start that? Was that part of your homeschool adventure as a younger Hannah?
Yeah, my parents always would bring us on trips, always they're still adventuring now. They actually... We were kind of like low-key being competitive about it in our family, who could reach 50 states.
Oh, has anybody done it?
Yeah, my parents did it like a month ago.
Well,
like I was so close.
Years. I know.
But yeah, so always down for an adventure, and and I think they instilled that in all of us, all the kids. We all like to travel. But even locally, like even in Louisiana, when I moved to Eunice, I was like, what is this place? What is Cajun Mardi Gras? Why are they selling weird like intestines in Winn-Dixie? Like there's just little things that
and who's buying that, you know?
Exactly. It's like, ugh, I don't know. There's barely any left. Somebody's buying it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I love it. I mean, I think there's so many things that are odd when you travel, but to the people living there, they're not odd at all. It's their normal.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting being exposed to that. And I love seeing weird roadside attractions and just like strange tourist draws, because I think about the person that decided to create that and mm-hmm. the time and energy it went into building like whatever, world's largest frying pan. And it's just such a weird goal to have, but I can appreciate it because I feel like I have a lot of weird goals too. And it kind of, I don't know, pulling off the side of the road and seeing things like that exposes you to towns and places you wouldn't have gone otherwise.
Right. Now, I asked you earlier what your favorite state was, and you said Louisiana.
Yeah.
So we have so much here. If you can mm-hmm. talk about that, I know you enjoy traveling in Louisiana, learning more about, because we have separate regions. We're so different.
Right.
Here, we're different than Shreveport or New Orleans or Baton Rouge. So you've gone all over the state.
Yeah, and I still haven't been to Grand Isle. Like,
oh my goodness.
I know, I need to go. My husband used to have to like bring parts there. Like, we get paid to like make that drive and come back. So I don't think it's like an exciting thing for him. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm like, Grand Isle, it sounds amazing.
You like the suntan?
Yeah.
You can get a great suntan there. I don't know if it's the beach or what, but there's a lot. I mean, that's enjoyable.
Well, my whole life, people were like, Holly Beach, ugh. Like, yeah, what's the point? I don't know. They said negative things about it. And when I finally went, I was like, this place is amazing.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. So I think, too, it's just when you see things for yourself, the perception might be different than what you thought it was going to be. One of my favorite things to do in Louisiana, sometimes there's places that you don't necessarily have access to, but I've volunteered with a few different organizations, and one is like a coastal organization, coastal restoration, and mm-hmm. they will take you in airboats and you can like plant grass in the marsh, and it is just, I don't know, super adventurous and fun, and you get to see parts of Louisiana that maybe you haven't been able to before. I got off of the airboat and it started back up, and I didn't even realize how powerful they are. It blew me over. I like flew like a foot backwards.
You survived.
And I survived to tell the tale.
Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Yeah. So I love Louisiana. I think if it wasn't my favorite, I probably still wouldn't be here. I just think there's always more to discover. And mm-hmm. and then it's fun when you bring people that aren't from here and see it through their eyes. It's really interesting too. All of our weird and wacky things.
I think we have great, weird, wacky things. And if more people really loved Louisiana like you do, I think we would rise in all these rankings. You know, mm-hmm. I think enough people don't realize how much there really is to love. It's about respecting our people and our sportsman's paradise and all the things we have that are special. So mm-hmm. I'm glad you talked about that. Well, as we're winding down, I had a question. I read this interview you did with Aileen Bennett, and I think you mentioned that a book that really inspired you was The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls. And I read that in my book club, and it's kind of about a broken family story, right? Like, mm-hmm. what was it about that for people that have read The Glass Castle? What inspired you?
I think if I had any genre, and I don't read super often, I do love audiobooks, but I love tragic memoirs. I don't know tragic, what that says about me. People have told me I need to read Bambi. So if that kind of summarizes my reading list, like sweet, sad.
The mom but, always dies.
But in the end, like the human spirit triumphs. Mm-hmm. I think there's just, there's so many. Educated. Have you read that memoir?
No.
If you like The Glass Castle, you'll love Educated. Hmm. Oh, it's so good. But in both of those, it's like, there's so much stacked up against them, but I think, just their resilience and not only for surviving, but thriving and, mm-hmm. and really those painful or negative parts of how their story went being kind of like the things that make them who they are and being proud of that. And so, it's inspirational, I guess.
Yeah. Any advice for young people or anybody that is interested in maybe they've had this itch for years to sell their art or just start being an artist? Any advice for people? Like, how do you start? How do you find a market or sell your work?
Well, for me, even being, you know, going to school for it, I was not prepared to talk about my work or show my work to people.
Or price it, huh?
Oh, all of it was so personal and overwhelming. It was like ripping off 1,000 band-aids. Like, nobody wants to do it. I was much happier just making work and keeping it, you know, for myself. But I started doing art markets, farmers markets, and selling bath bombs and other stuff. And that felt less scary. And then I slowly implemented a few art prints, you know.
Put them in the back.
Yeah, put them in the back. Oh, here's, you really want to see it? And it really, it had to be slow like that for me. I had to go with what felt natural. And I mean, I handmade like every business card and like put so much energy and love into it. And then of course you have that event where like you look and your business cards are like all over the ground. And I mean, look, see, we're getting into the Bambi territory.
Yeah.
Happy, sad, sweet.
You had handmade those cards.
Yeah.
Oh, and people were just
like, whatever. But I think experiencing that was part of the journey, and it's important. I don't want to be like, I don't know. I don't want to build like a hard exterior. I don't think that's the goal. But I think I can kind of shrug things off, and it's not as personal as maybe it started off being. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I think through this whole process, putting your work and yourself out there in general, not just for visual art, but for any discipline or anything that is special to you, can feel so vulnerable. And it can feel, the moment that you feel those pinpricks and you get a negative response, like, why am I even doing this? But in the end, I think it's been a really great thing to let people into my world and into my thoughts and into my work. And not everyone will get it. And I've even had, you know, to just say, that's awesome. If I, mm-hmm. I want to attract the people that are into this, and I want to repel the people that aren't, because they'll never be into it.
And they'll be into other things.
They'll be into other things. Yeah. You can't get everybody. I want to make something that that's my personality. I want everybody to get it. But that's not going to happen. And so, yeah, just knowing that and being okay with it. And when you put yourself out there, there's going to be clients and events and situations that feel like big losses. But what can you take away from it? And I've tried to do that with everything I've come across. And I'm so grateful, because I feel like I'm not bitter over the bad stuff.
Yeah.
It's just part of the story. It's part of the journey. And it's helped me grow in the right direction.
So do you get your business cards printed online now? Or do you still handmade them?
I do the best thing possible. What's which that? Is I have like my business card information that's on a giant roll of stickers.
Oh.
And I stick the stickers on my products. And then I literally just peel the sticker and hand them to people that want a quote unquote business card.
Mm-hmm.
So I eliminated the business card altogether. Yeah. Now it's just a business sticker.
Right. And they can find you. So yeah. Your website is what?
HannahGumbo.com.
And that's pretty easy to remember. Yeah. So yeah. And I want to say, I'm here in person with you, of course. Your energy is what shines through. And just think, if everybody loved all your work, you wouldn't be able to sleep. You'd be working 24/7.
And I need my sleep.
You need your sleep. And you need, we all need to realize that, like you said, not everybody gets all parts of us, but I think your work is really admired. And I want to congratulate you on
sharing
yourself, your energy, and your talent, because you've got a whole big world and a long life in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky to have you in our world.
Thank you so much,
Hannah Gumbo. So thanks for doing this today. And I want to thank our listeners. Hannah found me through just listening to some of my other funkier interviews, you know, more fun. And I appreciate everybody that listens to our podcast. You can go to discoverlafayette.net and look through all of our guests. There's over 170 guests now. And you can also, even better, go on your phone or device and subscribe to Discover Lafayette. It would be a wonderful thing to do. You can share this with others and learn about Hannah Gumbo and other people in our community. Also, this podcast is not possible without the support of a few very important people in my life. First of all, Raider. They help us tape and mix our podcast, and we've been trying to work through the COVID challenges, and they've been wonderful to keep this podcast going. I also want to thank our sponsors, Iberia Bank, and Lafayette General Health. Without you guys, I couldn't have done this, so thank you. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.